WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
A new update to the GI Bill means more than a million veterans and their family members could qualify for one extra year of education benefits. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Before the adjustment, veterans with at least two separate periods of military service only received 36 months of the benefit. But with the recent change, the cap is removed, and college funding for some vets could cover up to 48 months. The move comes after the Supreme Court ruled last April on the case of one Army veteran who accused the government of wrongly denying him the full benefits he'd earned on the battlefield. With more on what these changes could mean for veterans, we talked with consumer investigations reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, Stephanie Zimmerman, and director of the Veterans Legal Clinic and assistant professor of law at University of Illinois Chicago, Yelena Duterte. I started by asking, who is James Rudisill and what is his story? Here's Stephanie.
Yeah, Jim Rudisill is a long-serving, decorated Army veteran. He's now in his 40s, working as an FBI agent in Virginia. And he had multiple separate periods of service in the Army. He kept reenlisting. He rose to the rank of captain. He had three tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan. He was wounded there. He, during his time in the Army and after, he was concerned about his fellow service members and vets, folks suffering from PTSD and other problems. And so he decided to apply to and got accepted into Yale for their divinity school. And he had this plan to re-enter the Army one more time as a chaplain to help his fellow soldiers. But that got thwarted by the way the veterans the VA calculated his GI Bill benefits. They essentially shorted him on a year of college.
Yeah. Why did he think that he had access to 48 months of college payments in the first place? And why did the VA say otherwise?
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. Under federal law, if you have two different GI Bill plans, one being the Montgomery GI Bill plan, which is the old one, and then also the newer, really generous post 9/11 GI Bill plan. Under federal law, you can actually get a maximum of 48 months of college, which is pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. And that's what Mr. Rudisill was counting on to be able to do this Yale program, because he had already used some of his benefits early on for his undergraduate education. He did that with the Montgomery plan. And he thought he could tap one plan and then go to the other because, of course, he had earned benefits under both. But the VA used this very strange calculation, this kind of absurd situation where they said, well, if you want to switch to the other plan, you can trade in your benefits, but only up to the amount that you still had left on your old plan. And that weird calculation resulted in him only getting 36 months of college,
right,
not the maximum 48. And that's what the whole argument was about.
Professor, I want to bring you in here. Tell us more about this GI Bill. How does it work exactly?
Yeah, so there's these two different GI bills. Before 2009, we had the Montgomery GI Bill, and it was a monthly compensation. You receive today, it would be about $2,400 a month, but it wouldn't cover any tuition. And the post 9/11 GI Bill, as Stephanie said, is much more generous.
Mm-hmm.
The tuition is paid. For public schools, it's completely covered, and then you get another $2,800 here in Chicago for that housing allowance.
Why were there two kinds in the first place?
Yeah, in 2009, they realized they need to recognize the service of the Afghanistan and Iraq veterans, and they wanted to show their appreciations and also bump up in recruitment, thinking about how can we make sure we get more folks into the service and acknowledge their service.
Is there a benefit then to having both? Like, could veterans benefit from maybe just having one kind to worry about instead of the two?
Yeah, you can't use them at the same time. So that is a blanket rule. You can't use the post-9/11 and the Montgomery. But if you have multiple periods of service, they should be acknowledging each period with that same cap of 48 months.
Mm-hmm. So, Stephanie, I mean, something tells me Rudisill, he's not the only one being denied like this, right? Just like you just explained. Tell us some other stories that you've heard.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think many vets are only now realizing that this court decision could get them more benefits, because this just happened in April. So there's probably a lot of people listening that think, oh, I was denied, but hey, maybe I can qualify under this Rudisill decision. And the VA puts that number of veterans at over a million people, but Rudisill's lawyers say it's actually even more, maybe 1.7 million. So there are folks out there that fall into this bucket.
Yeah. And tell us more details, Stephanie, of what the Supreme Court ruled in this case.
Yeah, so they basically said that Rudisill, because he had earned both of these benefits, that there's no reason why he shouldn't be able to get the maximum 48 months. That's what federal law says. But like I said, it was this very convoluted calculation. And in fact, Rudisill called it absurd in his lawsuit. Mm-hmm. The way the VA decided that, well, because he tapped into his Montgomery first and then he wanted to switch to 9/11, we're going to cut him off at 36 months. And it seems really odd because, you know, he should have been able to use both. And that was the argument. And that's what the Supreme Court agreed with.
Professor, would you consider this a positive change?
A massive positive change for veterans. They are now able to get that additional 12 months that they had to forfeit. They required them to sign a document that forfeited that Montgomery GI Bill. Mm-hmm. And now they're coming back and saying, we did this incorrectly. The Supreme Court told us, so now we have to fix it. It's taken 9 months for them to change their guidance. But now we're seeing the VA making those moves. And I'm hopeful that they will reach out to each one of those veterans and let them know they have an additional 12 months of benefits.
Why do you think it took so long?
Bureaucracy. I think a lot of this is the VA being VA and making sure they've crossed all their T's and dotted all their I's and making sure everyone understands what this new program will look like.
Who exactly does this change impact? Because I know not all veterans are the same, right? They don't all have the exact same story or path.
That's right. Right now, the VA is interpreting this as veterans who have served two enlistment periods. So they have had to have enlisted for a period and then re-enlisted at another point in time. There is litigation right now looking at a veteran who had a six-year enlistment and whether they would be entitled to both GI Bill benefits under one enlistment. So there's some litigation happening at the Veterans Court right now.
Veterans themselves, we know that they're not, this is not just for them, right? They're not the only folks that can access the GI Bill's college payments plans, right, Professor?
That's right.
So talk to us about the eligibility requirements for their family members. How does that whole thing work?
We don't anticipate this having much of an impact on family members. Only the post 9/11 GI Bill was able to be transferred from the veteran to their dependents, so they wouldn't have been eligible for the Montgomery GI Bill itself. So that's where I think if they transferred it to a family member, they may still be entitled to the Montgomery GI Bill, the veteran would be, mm-hmm. and then their family member can get the post 9/11 GI Bill.
Stephanie, in your reporting, didn't you come across with Rudisill some issues that he might have had with transferring the benefit to his family? How did that work?
Not with Rudisill, but I've written many, many stories in the Sun-Times about people who had problems transferring their post 9/11 GI Bill benefits to their children. And what was happening with that was the reason why they were able to transfer their benefits is that they agreed to serve an extra 4 years, and they did that. But then what happened was their retirement date did not line up with their enrollment date in this program, and it was another bureaucratic thing. thing, that kids were being denied the college money, or even worse, they had already gone to college, and then the VA was trying to claw back, you know, up to $100,000 per student. It was pretty bad.
And so folks ultimately thought that this was just a perk being used to try to retain them for an extra 4 years.
Well, the transferability, to be able to transfer your benefit to your child or your spouse, you had to agree to serve an extra 4 years. And that was during a time when we were, you know, had a lot of troops overseas and they were trying to retain. And so people would make that calculation that it was worth it to be able to give the college money to the kids.
Yeah.
So it was sad when the kids couldn't get it.
And your thoughts, Stephanie, I asked the professor this earlier about just, you know, the why do we have the two kinds in the first place? I mean, do you see, you've done extensive reporting on this, do you see a benefit to having both? Or do you think, you know, maybe veterans could stand to benefit from just having one of these to worry about?
Well, so the Montgomery GI Bill, that was the one that was started in the mid-1980s, and that will actually sunset anyway in 2030. So that won't be around forever, only till 2030. The post 9/11 one took effect in 2009. And like the professor said, that was to acknowledge the service of all the people that were in these overseas wars after 9/11. I think personally, it is worth getting both, especially if you think you want both an undergraduate education and maybe someday getting a master's degree. You know, why not, right?
That's a good point. But it won't go forever.
But for now, I mean, for somebody joining the military now, I think it would make sense to get both.
Professor, can you share more of what you've heard from folks trying to navigate all of this over the years?
One of the big issues we've been seeing is the limiting date. So for the Montgomery GI Bill benefits, you have 10 years to use it. And for the post 9/11 GI Bill benefits, you have 15 years to use it. And so with this change, people are trying to figure out, when is that new limiting date? When do I need to use this Montgomery GI Bill by?
Yeah.
And VA has put out guidance, a little confusing still. And so I think we're going to see how the kinks work out over time. This might be litigation, but I'm hopeful that the VA will do its job.
And Professor Duterte, here's the thing. I mean, many people that are listening to us right now, they might think, well, this is a no-brainer. Someone risked their life for this country. They should be entitled to these kinds of benefits. So why do you think veterans have to jump through so many hoops?
I think it's two things. I think Congress moves very quickly on these bills. This is the one place in Congress where they can agree and have bipartisan agreement. And they push through bills that aren't really thought through all the time. And they get these confusing statutes that sound like they might conflict with each other. And then you have VA trying to interpret it all. And so I think there's the interpretation by VA, Congress not doing a great job at creating statutes.
Everyone's not talking to each other.
That's right.
Clearly. So, Stephanie, if someone thinks that they're eligible here, or what do they do?
Yeah, the VA says that it will be communicating all of this to the people that are affected. People who want to get a jump on that, there's a website, benefits.va.gov. If you search Rudisil on there, they have like a whole Rudisil page that explains their interpretation. But you know, as you mentioned, some of this stuff is still being continuing to be fought in the Veterans Court in D.C. because Rudisil's lawyers are saying it should be interpreted even more broadly and include even more people.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I hear Rudisil's lawyers are planning to continue this fight, Stephanie.
Yes. Yeah, they are. I mean, the VA is kind of interpreting the Supreme Court decision that happened in April as applying only to people who had a break in service and then reenlisted, like Rudisil. But Rudisil's lawyers say that that's much too narrow, that it should actually apply to a broader category of people who had both of these GI Bill plans. So the court battles are going to continue. As far as, like, you had asked, like, why does this happen? I wonder if some of it is that the VA wants to limit the amount of money that goes out the door. Mm. Because the fewer the people that qualify, that's less money spent. You know, and Rudisil's lawyers just say, hey, you know, this is just not fair.
You're nodding there, Professor. You agree?
Yeah, budgets are always important. And these are, you know, mandatory spending. If someone is entitled to a benefit, they are required to pay out this money.
Yeah. Well, help us understand even more. I mean, what other issues do veterans face when it comes to GI Bill benefits that you think maybe could be addressed next?
The one area I've seen, and this isn't a statutory or regulatory interpretation, this is VA doing its job, is when a veteran has multiple enlistments in one period. So they go in for 4 years and they re-enlist and have an additional 2 or 3 years and end up with a lower than honorable discharge. Mm-hmm. Those veterans are not entitled to GI Bill benefits for that second period, but should be for that first period. And we see the VA not picking up on those enlistment contracts to show that first period was honorable for GI Bill benefits. So we're seeing a lot of that come up, but we don't see it as a statutory or regulatory issue. We see it as VA actually implementing the law.
And you work with a lot of folks in that similar situation,
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So, Stephanie, what are you watching next?
Well, I'm continuing to watch this transferability thing. Like I said, I had done quite a few stories investigating the situations of college kids, some of whom had been approved to go to college by the VA, had attended college, and then they were clawing back the money belatedly, wow, claiming that the parents' retirement dates didn't line up. And there still are some kids out there that have old debt from the U.S. Treasury Department because of that. So I'm continuing to watch that issue.
We'll leave it there. We've been talking with Veterans Legal Clinic Director Yelena Duterte and Chicago Sun-Times Consumer Investigations Reporter Stephanie Zimmerman. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Ellie Gilbert-Bear and Micah Yasin. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset brings you conversations to better understand and connect with our city and the world around us. To make sure you never miss an episode, you can subscribe to our podcast at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again tomorrow.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely